It's time now to give a rundown of what it is that we're going to be listening to during the final installment. This is the fifth installment of the ongoing or the archive show that I've been putting together for now a little over a month. It's called The Destabilization of the USSR and Eastern Europe, a Prelude to World War III, and it is going to be included in the archives as Radio Free America program number 33. And this is the fifth installment. We will be talking a little bit tonight about the Soviet Union, and but mostly we will be talking about what is going on in Eastern Europe, and there are some very, very disturbing things going on in that part of the world. We're going to begin by once again talking about an organization called the Free Congress Foundation. This is an organization put together by Paul Weyrich, one of the linchpins of the American far right. And we talked about that organization in conjunction with its activities, in particular political organizing inside the Soviet Union, the most notable connections there being some very serious connections between Paul Weyrich and the Free Congress Foundation, which in turn is being utilized by the National Endowment for Democracy, and the organization and political structure behind Boris Yeltsin, notably a Communist Party organ called the IRG, put together by, among others, Andrei Sakharov. There are very strong connections between Yeltsin and the Free Congress Foundation, and the Free Congress Foundation has taken credit for much of the political success enjoyed by Boris Yeltsin so far. We are going to take a look at the Free Congress Foundation, and once again, we're going to be taking a look at some information from Covert Action Information Bulletin number 35, and specifically, we're going to be talking about what the Free Congress Foundation is doing in other areas of Eastern Europe. And that will be the first item that we will be talking about. And this by way of bridging some of the activities that we've looked at in the Soviet Union and showing that basically what's going around for the Soviet Union has been coming around for Eastern Europe as well. We will be taking a look at Free Congress Foundation activities in, among other countries, Budapest of Hungary. We will take a look at their organizing in East Germany, Romania, Czechoslovakia, Yugoslavia, and Bulgaria as well. All of that, again, coming from the article in Covert Action Information Bulletin number 35. I will tell you more about that article and that publication when we get to the main body of the broadcast. Following that, we're going to be taking a look at another very important article in that very same very important issue of Covert Action Information Bulletin. This article is called Balkan Nationalists Peddling Fascism. It's co-authored by Howard Goldenthal and Russ Ballant. Russ Ballant, the co-author of the article about the Free Congress Foundation as well. This talks about the return of a number of fascist elements to Eastern Europe, largely courtesy of activities on the part of the West, notably the United States and Canada in this instance. We will talk about some Canadian connections here to fascist organizations and elements in Eastern Europe. And it's interesting here that many of the organizations that are discussed in this article are also organizations that have had contact with the Free Congress Foundation and some of its forays into Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union. We're going to be taking a look at the return of the Romanian Iron Guard, a brutal fascist institution in Romania, which collaborated enthusiastically with the Nazis. It's something that we looked at in Radio Free America program number 2. We touched back on it in a miscellaneous archive show called Nazis and Anti-Semites on George Bush's campaign. We're going to take a look at Iron Guard connections and activities, which are ongoing in Romania, notably the National Christian Peasants Party, an organization which is heavily influenced by the Iron Guard, and we will be talking about both in this particular article and also in another article from Newsweek of May of 1990, which talks about the rise of anti-Semitism in Eastern Europe. We will be talking also about fascist activities in Czechoslovakia. We're going to be taking a look at the Slovakian exile movement, something which is reviving today under Václav Havel. And in particular, we're going to take a look at the remnants of the Linka Party, H-L-I-N-K-A. That was the fascist collaborationist party in Czechoslovakia, or actually Slovakia, under Nazi domination during World War II. And we're going to take a look at the Slovak World Congress, an organization which in many ways is carrying on the traditions of the Linka Party and which features many of the Linka Party's key functionaries in prominent positions. That organization, unfortunately, has some very direct ties to the Vaclav Havel government, which is now experiencing a considerable dislocation as a result of the activities of some of these individuals. If Vaclav Havel goes under, or if Czechoslovakia gets split up by the actions of these fascists, it seems to me that Havel has nobody to blame but himself. When you lie with the dogs, you rise with the fleas, as someone once said, and certainly Vaclav Havel has been lying with the dogs. We're also going to take a look at great length this evening for a short period of time in this particular article, The Balkan Nationalists Peddling Fascism, at activities going on in Croatia and Yugoslavia. We're going to be taking a look at some Ustashi elements. That movement was the brutal fascist movement in independent Croatia under the Nazis, under Nazi domination in World War II. That organization even outdid the Romanian Iron Guard in their savagery, and like so many fascist and Nazi elements, they regrouped in the West after the war, largely as a result of sponsorship by the U.S. National Security Establishment. They are now very active inside Croatia. We'll review some activities of the OUN, which we looked at considerable length last week and talked about also the week before that. By way of touching back on activities in the Soviet Union, we will take a look at OUN activities in the Soviet Union under the auspices of the ABN, the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations that we looked at. And we will be taking a look at some connections between the Free Congress Foundation and OUN-related elements operating in the Ukraine. We will also touch on the Hungarian Arrow Cross movement and residual elements which are active today in Hungary. They are mentioned in this particular article, Balkan Nationalists Peddling Fascism. We will come back to the Arrow Cross and Hungarian Fascism and Anti-Semitism in the Newsweek article of May 7th of 1990 as well. We're also going to be taking a look at the activities of fascist elements in Latvia, one of the Baltic states, and we took a look at the reintroduction of fascist elements into Lithuania in the very first installment of this program, and I expressed my view at that time that in conjunction with the U.S. Gulf War, the destabilization of the Baltic states and the attempts by the Baltic states to secede from the Soviet Union in effect represented, in essence, represented a flanking maneuver both against the Soviet southern and northern flanks, and I suspect that if, in fact, the Baltic republics continue to proceed down the path to secession, that will provoke a militant response on the part of the Soviet National Security Establishment, a response which I believe elements of our own National Security Establishment would very much like to see, and which I think they are in fact working to provoke. We will also be taking a look at, as I said, at an article that we looked at part of a couple of weeks ago. It's called The Long Shadow. It's from Newsweek of May 7th of 1990, and there is some very disturbing information that the activities of organizations like the Free Congress Foundation and some of their fascist contacts and collaborators in Eastern Europe are in fact reviving exactly the same kinds of abuses which took place in that part of the world during the Second World, during and prior to the Second World War. It should, of course, be borne in mind that the Axis consisted not just of Japan, Germany, and Italy, but also Hungary, Bulgaria, and Romania fought on the side of the Axis in the Second World War. We'll be taking a look at activities in those countries, which are sadly reminiscent of what took place during the Second World War, in this very disturbing article from Newsweek of May 7th of 1990. We're then going to take a look at a very, well, a very disturbing series of events currently taking place in Yugoslavia. And what we're going to be looking at in Yugoslavia is the Croatian secessionist movement, the residual Ustashi movement. There are a lot of things going on in Yugoslavia at the moment. Yugoslavia is a relatively recent nation, and there have always been fierce rivalries among the various ethnic nationalities in that country. And certainly the activities of the Ustashi, the Croatian fascists, which survived World War II largely under the auspices of organizations like the CIA, the World Anti-Communist League, and other organizations. Now, the World Anti-Communist League is called the World League for Freedom and Democracy, but it's basically the same old thing, and it smells the same old way, it does the same old things. And we will be taking a look, by way of focusing in on a microcosm of what is going on elsewhere in Eastern Europe, we will be taking a very close look at what's going on in Croatia today. As I said, one should not oversimplify what is going on either in Croatia or in the Soviet Union or elsewhere in Eastern Europe. The bitter ethnic hostilities that exist there predate the Cold War and could not be said by any stretch of the imagination to be due exclusively to the Cold War. They predate it. It should also be noted, though, that one of the major MOs of our intelligence system and the U.S. national security establishment for many years has been to destabilize countries and overthrow them by promoting traditional ethnic hostilities within those nations, within the targeted nation. There are very disturbing indications that some of the Ustashi activities going on in Croatia have been aided and abetted by elements of our own national security establishment, and we will be taking a look at some of those in the last installment of the program, which will be titled Return of the Ustashi. We're going to take a look in particular at the bitterness that exists between Serbs and Croats, two of the dominant nationalities inside Yugoslavia, and the hostility between the Serbs and the Croats, the re-flaring up, the resurgence of that hostility is one of the major factors in the destabilization of Yugoslavia today. It is questionable whether Yugoslavia is even going to be able to withstand these tensions and whether it's going to remain one nation or dissolve. We're going to take a look at the resurgence of the Ustashi, the resurgence of the bitterness and fear that they provoked among Serbs. And we're going to take a look back in history at exactly what the Ustashi were, why their resurgence has provoked the enormous fear in the Serbian community in Yugoslavia. We're going to take a look at a fellow named Andrija Artukovic, known as the Himmler of the Balkans. He was the Minister of the Interior under the fascist independent state of Croatia. And we'll take a look at the enthusiastic slaughter that he promoted in Croatia during the Second World War. That will come from a book called Wanted, The Search for Nazis in America by Howard Bloom. Then we're going to take a look at some information from a book called Inside the League about the former World Anti-Communist League, now again the League for the World League for Freedom and Democracy. We're going to take a look at how the Ustashi, the brutal Croatian fascists, survived the Second World War and how they continue to operate around the world today, in particular in the United States. We will take a look at the second generation of Ustashi, because there is a second generation. They have come back, and like all good fascists, they have raised their young at their according to their creed. There is a whole new generation of Ustashi, and we will be taking a look at the second generation of Ustashi, which now infect the world. And we, in particular, we're going to take a look at an element which links events right here at home with what is going on today in Croatia. We will be concluding our look at Inside the League by talking about the April 10th celebration. That is a celebration conducted by the Ustashi, which celebrates the founding of the independent state of Croatia under Nazi domination during World War II. It is viewed with great horror and mourning by other peoples in Yugoslavia, because that was the beginning of the Holocaust that we will take a look at in the information from Wanted, The Search for Nazis in America. The Ustashi celebrate the April 10th holiday, and they have been very successful in getting elements of some of the more reactionary elements of the Republican Party to support them in the celebration of April 10th. And we will then take a look at an ominous note right here at home in the plastic fantastic Silicon Valley. For those of you who eventually hear this program by tape, I produce and record these programs in the Silicon Valley, as it is known. These programs originate from Los Altos Hills, which is very close to San Jose. And in another station, another non-commercial radio station that I work at, KKUP-FM, there was a fellow who for many years ran a thing called the Croatian Radio Hour, and ultimately his demise as a broadcaster came when he went into a discussion of the April 10th holiday and why it is celebrated, and a brutal misrepresentation of world history, which you will have a chance to hear. In April of 1989, this individual, his name was Ante Jakovcevic, went on the air on KKUP and went on at some length about April 10th and talked about how the Germans were being invited. This is the day when we celebrate when the Germans were invited into Yugoslavia. They were not invited into Yugoslavia any more than they were invited into Holland or Belgium or France or the Soviet Union or Norway or Denmark or any of the other places that they wound up socializing in. And it's worth noting that This particular individual was able to hold forth for the better part of 5 years on KKUP, which is a nice liberal radio station, at least in theory, and it's a member of the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. And it's also worth noting that this same individual is now in Croatia and functioning in an official capacity for the Croatian government. I don't know whether he is a political official or whether he's a member of the Croatian militia, which has been formed, but there we will actually have a chance to hear a link between what has transpired in the United States in recent years, and what is going on in Croatia, an actual living link between the return of the Ustashi in Croatia and the sponsorship of the Ustashi and other fascist elements by the United States and in the United States. That's what we have on tap for this evening, so pull up a chair, cock an ear, because we have a lot to listen to and a lot to talk about this evening. None of it, unfortunately, very pleasant, but all of it very necessary. And after another musical break, we will launch into the main body of tonight's broadcast, the final installment of Radio Free America 36, the destabilization of the USSR in Eastern Europe, a prelude to World War III. This is the fifth and a final installment of what has evolved now into Radio Free America program number 36, the destabilization of the USSR and Eastern Europe, a prelude to World War III. It is not my belief that the people involved in what I see as the destabilization of the Soviet Union want a third world war, but it is my fear that it could result in a third world war. There may very well be a miscalculation of some kind. It's also possible there's one more article from this current issue of Covert Action Information Bulletin that I'm thinking about including, so I may actually do one more short installment of this next week. This might be the last installment, but we will see. I have to reflect on that a little bit further. We may yet have a little bit more for this particular broadcast. In any event, we are for the most part now going to move from the Soviet Union and what is going on there to Eastern Europe. And by way of bridging what is going on in the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, we are going to take a look once again at the organization called the Free Congress Foundation. And I'm going to review sections of a very important article, one of many very important articles in the current issue, or the latest issue of Covert Action Information Bulletin. This is from Covert Action Information Bulletins number 35 from the fall of 1990. You can obtain Covert Action Information Bulletin from the following address: Covert Action Information Bulletin, P.O. Box 34583, Box 34583, Washington, D.C., 20043. Once again, Covert Action Information Bulletin, P.O. Box 34583, Washington, D.C., 20043. That's the address for Covert Action Information Bulletin. And once again, we are going to reread parts of an article called The Free Congress Foundation Goes East. And this is co-authored by Russ Ballant and Lewis Wolf. Lewis Wolf is one of the co-editors of Covert Action Information Bulletin. And by way of reviewing just what the Free Congress Foundation is, we are going to read the introductory part of the first part of this particular article, and then we are going to move from FCF activities in the Soviet Union, which we have already looked at, to FCF activities in Eastern Europe. Reading now, The Free Congress Foundation Goes East by Russ Ballant and Lewis Wolf from Covert Action Information Bulletin number 35, the fall of 1990. With the rapid pace of political change sweeping Eastern Europe and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, many opportunities have emerged for Western interests to intervene in the politics of that region. In some cases, such a vacuum has been created that virtual strangers to the area several years ago are now able to actively participate in changing those societies from within. These interventions are not only being practiced by mainstream organizations. The involvement of the United States far right brings with it the potential revival of fascist organizations in the East. One U.S. group, the Free Congress Foundation, has been playing a role in Eastern Europe and Soviet politics and has ties to Boris Yeltsin and the Interregional Deputies Group, or IRG, in the USSR. The Free Congress Foundation, or FCF, was founded in 1974 by Paul Weyrich, W-E-Y-R-I-C-H, as the Committee for the Survival of a Free Congress. Weyrich, who had started the Heritage Foundation the year before, was heavily funded by the Coors family for both organizations. Weyrich has kept one foot in the right wing of the Republican Party while dallying with the racist right and the extreme Christian right. In 1976, for instance, he and a handful of other new rightists, William Rusher, Morton Blackwell, and Richard Viguerie, attempted to take over the Segregationist American Independent Party, or AIP, formed by George Wallace in 1968. The AIP was an amalgam of Ku Klux Klan and John Birch Society elements. In 1982, Weyrich published an essay in which he stated, quote, "Culturally destructive government policies, racial hiring quotas and busing come to mind as examples, are to the new right more immediately important in the realm of action since the damage they can do is enormous and practically irremediable. This apparent defense of white culture, quote unquote, is dangerously close to the theories advocated by white supremacists today." FCF's direct involvement in Eastern Europe began about a year ago at the urging of one of its directors, Robert Kriebel, K-R-I-E-B-L-E, a retired Connecticut businessman. His Kriebel Foundation backed efforts in late 1989 to send Weyrich and four associates to Hungary and the Soviet Union, including Estonia, to help train right-wing leaders in ideological and electoral matters. Weyrich stated upon his return that his visit to Moscow was, quote, "the most incredible experience of our lives," unquote. There, he worked with the IRG of the Supreme Soviet, a leadership body of the Communist Party. He says that they were unequivocally in favor of private property, a market economy, and the restoration of religion. We've talked about FCF and some of its connections to the OUN and the UPA, and rather than focusing on its activities in the Soviet Union, which we have already covered at considerable length in the third installment of this particular broadcast, we're going to focus now on Free Congress Foundation activities in other parts of the former Soviet bloc, namely Eastern Europe. Skipping down in this particular article, we find the following Free Congress Foundation activities. The list here of various Free Congress Foundation activities covers activities in the period year 1989 through 1990. Ballant and Wolf write, "In 1989 to 90, the FCF conducted training programs in," and the list then follows, "Budapest, Hungary, November of 1989. Free Congress Foundation representatives trained leaders of the Hungarian New Democratic Forum, the Smallholders Party, and the Christian Democratic Party. Free Congress credits itself with enabling the three parties to gain 231 out of 386 seats in the Hungarian Parliament." And bear in mind the New Democratic Forum, or Democratic Forum as it's also known. We're going to take a look at that forum, and it would appear just like the World Anti-Communist League, which has connecting elements to it. It is anything but democratic. But bear in mind here, the Free Congress Foundation activities in Hungary, in particular, rereading this sentence, FCF representatives trained leaders of the Hungarian New Democratic Forum, the Smallholders Party, and the Christian Democratic Party, and they credit the Free Congress credits itself with enabling the three parties to gain 231 of 386 seats in the Hungarian Parliament. In particular, as I said, bear in mind the New Democratic Forum, or Democratic Forum, as it's also called. We will be coming back to that later in the program. Skipping down in this section of the article, Leipzig, East Germany, February of 1990. FCF representatives met with two conservative groups that were part of an anti-left alliance, the Democratic Awakening Party and the Democratic Social Union. Their discussions focused on, quote, "American political techniques," unquote, for application during the March 1990 elections. When FCF's people saw how cheap postage was in East Germany, they decided on the spot to teach their students the techniques of U.S.-style direct mail campaigning. Quote, "Our contacts in East Germany have since indicated that the advice of the foundation was, in their opinion, beneficial to the unexpected success they achieved in their elections," unquote. In September, FCF hosted a small group of East German opposition figures in Washington and is planning another meeting in Germany in January. Bucharest, Romania, March of 1990. Some 80 members of more than a dozen opposition groups were given a four-day seminar on the political skills to win elections, unquote, and again quoting, "free enterprise and the need for entrepreneurship," unquote. Participants were from the National Peasants Party. Remember that, because we're going to come back to that also. Participants were from the National Peasants Party, Free Students Union of the Polytechnical University, the Students League, Human Rights League, National Liberal Party, National Salvation Front, and Christian Social Democratic Party. Only a month prior to this meeting, the FCF opened a, quote, "field office" in Romania to develop new contacts. And again, and when we come back to activities going on in Romania, bear in mind the National Peasants Party. That's a key organization which has proved to be a conduit or a vehicle for residual elements of the fascist Iron Guard in Romania, one of the organizations also connected with the National Peasants Party. Continuing here with Wolf and Balant's Chronicle, Zagreb, Yugoslavia, April of 1990. In the Croatian capital of Zagreb, Zagreb, FCF staffers met with members of the Croatian Democratic Union for discussions in, quote, political techniques, governing, and building relationships between the regional and federal governments. The group strongly requested, quote, unquote, that the Free Congress people return to convene a conference on governing to include Croatians, Slovenes, Serbs, Montenegrins, and other ethnic groups. And we will be coming back in a big way to activities going on in Croatia and Yugoslavia later in the program. Prague, Czechoslovakia, April of 1990. From Zagreb, the same FCF team moved to Prague to convene a conference on techniques, strategies, goals, and objectives in elections, and on, quote, the establishment of democratic institutions, unquote. Attending the conference were some 50 persons representing dissident groups such as the Civic Forum, Public Against Violence, a parallel organization to the Civic Forum in Slovakia, Christian Democratic Movement, Christian Democratic Union, Social Democrats, Republican Party of Czechoslovakia, Pan-Europe Union, Democratic Initiative, and People for Active European Federation. A follow-up training program in the country was organized in July. And skipping down, Sofia, Bulgaria, August 1990. Paul Weirich and other FCF staff, together with Robert Kriebel and Detroit businessman Don Fisher, met with approximately one-third of the opposition members in the parliament. The meeting was attended by Dimitar Lujev, chief political advisor to President Jelju Jelev. Those two men's last names, Lujev is L-O-U-D-J-E-V, and Jelev is Z-H-E-L-E-V. Reviewing more now about the Free Congress Foundation, just like the World League for Freedom and Democracy or the National Endowment for Democracy, this organization cloaks itself in democratic camouflage. However, its real goals and antecedents would appear to be much more sinister, and for all of the use of the word democracy and for all of their advocacy of free elections, democracy, and so forth, in fact, it would appear from the underpinnings of the organization that democracy is not something the Free Congress Foundation is overly enamored of, or certainly it's something that they are willing to compromise with. They're willing to compromise to an enormous extent. Reviewing, again, some information about the Free Congress Foundation, courtesy of Balant and Wolf. Those seeking guidance from the FCF for a, quote, religious and moral rebirth, unquote, would be well advised to consider the company that FCF keeps. The Free Congress Foundation is generally identified with the secular New Right rather than the religious New Right, but in fact it melds both currents of rightist activity. Although structurally one organization, FCF could be seen as a dozen semi-independent groups housed in one office complex and with one boss. The FCF divides many of its activities into centers. There are centers for government and politics, law and democracy, cultural conservatism, state policy, conservative governance, child and family policy, foreign policy, transportation policy, Catholic policy, and the new freedom and democracy. In the FCF's 1988 annual report, the Center for Catholic Policy states, quote, "The public policy influence and activity of the Catholic Church in America often runs counter to the interests of Catholic laity. The Center for Catholic Policy seeks to instruct conservative Catholic laity on how to become influential in shaping public policy stands taken by the Church," unquote. The FCF report says that a, quote, "network of some 40 national Catholic organizations, institutions, and publications which share a generally conservative viewpoint," unquote, was formed by FCF in January of 1988 and called the Siena Group, capital S-I-E-N-A. According to the FCF, among the top priorities of the Siena Group in 1988 was mobilizing opposition to a U.S. Catholic Conference statement on AIDS policy, which was favorable to the objectives of the gay and lesbian rights movement. Siena Group participants convinced the bishops to set aside the AIDS document. And finally, we should bear in mind, too, that their Liberation Support Alliance, that is to say, the Free Congress Foundation's Liberation Support Alliance, was headed up in the East by a fellow named Laszlo Pastor, was headed up, basically, by a fellow named Laszlo Pastor, L-A-S-Z-L-O-P-A-S-Z-T-O-R, who, as we've seen, was a member of the fascist Hungarian Arrow Cross and a key functionary both with the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations as well as the FCF. And with people like that and with associations and views like that, Free Congress Foundation is an organization that is frankly not to be viewed as something involved with democracy. It appears that from their views and associations that democracy is something they're not real crazy about, and something that, in fact, they appear to be working against, at least to a certain extent. There is another very important article, and again, we've taken a look at Free Congress Foundation inside the Soviet Union. It's worth bearing in mind all of the other places that they have been operating. Bear in mind Romania and the National Peasants Party, or National Christians Peasants Party, as we're going to see it has been renamed. Bear in mind also the Democratic Forum, or New Democratic Forum, in Hungary that they worked with. And we're going to take a look at how some of these organizations have affected some of the countries and the societies that they are operating in, and we're going to take a look at some of the residual fascist elements operating under their banners as well. Another very important article in this very same issue of Covert Action Information Bulletin, namely issue number 35, is entitled, Balkan Nationalists Peddling Fascism. Once again, Balkan Nationalists Peddling Fascism. It's co-authored by Howard Goldenthal, Goldenthal, and Russ Belant, Bellant, the co-author of the Free Congress Foundation article that we just reviewed part of. And we're going to take a look now at Western imports of fascism into Eastern Europe, and this is a pattern that we have looked at for many years on this broadcast. The chief organs that we have looked at in this connection are, first of all, of course, the Galen Spy Organization. That is the espionage organization put together by Reinhard Galen, last name G-E-H-L-E-N. Galen, recall, was Hitler's chief of intelligence for the Eastern Front during World War II. He then jumped first to the CIA, then NATO, and ultimately Germany, and kept his organization intact. His organization, the former Nazi Eastern Front Intelligence Organization, and involving thousands of SS and Gestapo veterans, many of them war criminals, that organization became the CIA's Department of Russian and Eastern European Affairs, then became the de facto NATO Intelligence Organization, and ultimately the BND, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, the German Intelligence Service, which it is to this day, with some of the junior members during the World War II period, people in their early 20s, now serving in senior positions, and they're now in the same generation as George Bush. They're in their late 60s and early 70s. The other organization, of course, is the World Anti-Communist League and the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations in particular, an organization which is inextricably linked with the Galen Organization and which has for some time maintained as its foreign policy not only the rollback, quote-unquote, of communism from Eastern Europe, which has now happened, but also the breakup of the Soviet Union into its constituent nationalist republics. That is something which may take place, although, as I have said in earlier installments of this series, my feeling is that that will simply result in a crackdown by the Soviet National Security Establishment, a crackdown that I think would be very much welcomed, since it would restart the Cold War. I think our military and our defense industries would very much like to see something like that take place. I think the Germans and Japanese would also like to see that take place, because it would keep the United States from becoming competitive, which it really no longer is, although we had been so dominant in world trade that we have not been completely overtaken by the Japanese and Germans. They are rapidly moving ahead of us in critical areas, and unless we reverse the trends of the last 10 years, or really more than 10 years, of wasting all of our capital resources as well as many of our R&D brains on the military, we are not going to be competitive. But bear in mind, as I said, the Galen Organization and the ABN, those are two of the main vehicles for people, for the West to import fascist elements into Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union and to utilize those fascist elements. We are going to be taking a look at some of these elements and some of these organizations now in this particular article. And in particular, we'll be taking a look at Romanian and American importing of fascists into Eastern Europe. And obviously, some of the organizations involved here intersect with the Free Congress Foundation. And we will see how some of the organizations that the Free Congress Foundation have been working with are in fact anything but democratic. Once again, Balkan Nationalists Peddling Fascism by Howard Goldenthal and Russ Belant. Goldenthal writes for the Toronto-based weekly news magazine Now, and Belant works with Political Research Associates in Cambridge, Massachusetts. The first section of the article we're going to look at involves what is going on in Romania. The article begins, "In the hyperbole accompanying the political transformation in Europe, some ugly side effects have been overlooked. Right-wing political activity reminiscent of the early part of the century is finding an audience again." And the first section here is called Iron Guard Redux in Romania. In last March, Moses Rosen, R-O-S-E-N, Romania's chief rabbi, traveled to Washington with an urgent request. In the Romanian city of Târgu Mureș, T-I-R-G-U-M-U-R-E-S, pogroms were being directed against the Hungarian minority. 6 Hungarians had been killed. Rosen asked the State Department to prevent the exit from the U.S. of Romanian exiles who were returning home to foment old hatreds, hatreds typified by the Iron Guard. To older Romanians and students of European history, the legacy of the Iron Guard is truly grotesque. Its members were responsible for violence so savage that they repeatedly offended the Nazis. 45 years later, young toughs describing themselves as Iron Guardists were taking credit for the murders in Târgu Mureș. According to Casimir Ionescu, I-O-N-E-S-C-U, then vice president for the Socialist National Salvation Front, an Iron Guard propaganda campaign had been underway since the December overthrow of Ceausescu. At the time of the Târgu Mureș violence, interim president Petre Roman, R-O-M-A-N, expelled three Romanian Canadians for promoting fascist ideas. One of those expelled was George Balasu, B-E-L-A-S-U, well known in the Romanian community in the West as editor of the pro-Iron Guard Romanian Voice. The Hamilton, Ontario-based paper supports Valerian Trifa, T-R-I-F-A, head of a faction of the Romanian Orthodox Church dominated by Iron Guardists. Trifa fled the U.S. in 1984 after the Justice Department's Office of Special Investigations found evidence implicating him in a Bucharest pogrom in 1941. Good press is not the only support such groups are receiving from the West. Vatra Romanesca, R-O-M-A-N-E-S-C-A, an extreme right organization including Iron Guardists, recently boasted it had financial backing from, quote, influential political figures at home and several more or less clandestine organizations abroad, particularly French and Canadian ones, unquote. Iron Guardists are also part of the leadership of the National Christian Peasants Party. The NCPP is virulently nativist and anti-Semitic and has been linked to violence against Hungarian farmers. Now bear in mind, in the article dealing with the Free Congress Foundation, the National Peasants Party, or National Christian Peasants Party, it is as it has been renamed, is one of the organizations that the Free Congress Foundation was working with in Romania. Some key points to highlight in this particular article. It should be noted that the Romanian Iron Guard was, as indicated here, a brutal fascist organization which collaborated enthusiastically with the Nazis and was the organization which dominated fascist Romania. Romania, recall, was one of the Axis nations, along with the big three, Germany, Japan, and Italy. There was also Hungary, Romania, and Bulgaria. And it should be noted again that the Romanian Iron Guard was the dominant fascist party in Romania, and like all good fascists, many of the Romanian Guardists then regrouped in the United States under the auspices of the Galen Organization and organizations like the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. The Iron Guard was covered extensively in the last section of Radio Free America program number 2, The Hidden History of the Cold War, looking back from 1984, The Hidden History of the Cold War, Part 2. That program was done in May of 1984, and in that broadcast, we took a look at a couple of people, the aforementioned Valerian Trifa, and also a fellow named Nicolae Malaxa. Valerian Trifa, now head of the Romanian American Orthodox, or for many years the head of the Romanian American Orthodox Episcopate, was a fellow who had worked for the Galen Organization. He was the fellow who was responsible for the bloody pogrom in Bucharest in 1941 that was alluded to here. We described that pogrom at considerable length in Radio Free America program number 2. It's worth noting that in addition to working for the Galen Organization and finding a safe haven in the United States, Valerian Trifa was invited by then-Vice President Richard Nixon to give the opening convocation, the opening prayer before the United States Senate in 1955. That appears to have been anything but an accidental or isolated incident on the part of Richard Nixon, because Nixon was heavily involved with the chief financier of the Iron Guard, a fellow named Nicolae Malaxa. Malaxa was the fellow who, a key industrialist in Romania, who put up much of the capital to foment the Iron Guard's ascension to power, and also was heavily involved in defense manufacturing for the Iron Guard during the Second World War. He also found a safe haven in the United States, chiefly as a result of the efforts of, or largely as a result of the efforts of Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon introduced many bills on behalf of a phony company that, or a front company, I really should say, that Malaxa was involved in. That company was called Western Western tube, and what it basically was created for was to put together steel tubing. And during the Korean War, the bills were introduced by Richard Nixon, encouraging that Nikolai Maloxa be allowed to stay in the United States because of the importance to the war effort of Western tube. In fact, the mailing address for Western tube was the law office of Richard Nixon's law firm, Bewley, Krupp, and Nixon, in Whittier, California at that time. So it is questionable just exactly how much manufacturing Western Tube was able to do. What is not open to question is the fact that Richard Nixon was a very key supporter of Nikolai Maloxa, and as I said, the mailing address for Western Tube was the Whittier Law Office of Richard Nixon. And again, that information was covered in Radio Free America program number 2, and in fact, that comes from the book Wanted, the Search for Nazis in America by Howard Bloom that we will be going into to a certain extent later on in the broadcast. So bear in mind, the National Christian Peasants Party, one of the organizations that has served as a resting place and a further vehicle for the fascist Romanian Iron Guard, and bear in mind its links to the Free Congress Foundation that we looked at. We will hear about the National Christian Peasants Party and their anti-Semitism and some of their current activities later on in the broadcast. It's worth noting that there has been a return to fascist activity in Czechoslovakia as well. Just as the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations has advocated the breakup of the Soviet Union and has supported Croatian separatists and the Ustashi, so the Slovakian separatists, who had a separate state in what had been Czechoslovakia during its Nazi occupation under a fellow named Reverend Joseph Tiso, well, the Slovakian separatists, inextricably linked with fascism and the history of fascism in Czechoslovakia, are also feeling their oats and have become very active in Czechoslovakia as well. Reading now from the New York Times of March 15th of 1991, this is a Reuters story datelined Bratislava, Czechoslovakia, and it's headlined Slovak Separatists Shout Abuse at Havel, and it reads in part as follows. Hundreds of angry Slovak nationalists rushed President Václav Havel and screamed abuse at him today during a demonstration for Slovak independence. Mr. Havel paid a brief visit to the Slovak capital to urge the nationalists celebrating the 52nd anniversary of the declaration of a separate state not to secede from Czechoslovakia. Emotions were high as he made an unscheduled walk through the city center to Slovak National Uprising Square, where more than 5,000 flag-waving nationalists were gathered. Hundreds split off from the rally to hurl abuse at Mr. Havel. "Go back to Prague, Judas," they shouted. Mr. Havel, well protected by bodyguards, was untouched in the crush, but several scuffles broke out between nationalists and Mr. Havel's supporters, and a car in the presidential motorcade waiting at the end of his quick walk was kicked and punched by enraged demonstrators who called Mr. Havel's appearance a provocation. Skipping down, the rally today repeated a call to declare the state sovereignty of Slovakia, a move which would break up the Czechoslovak Federation. Mr. Havel condemned the proposed declaration as a means to force independence by unconstitutional means. The demonstrators heard a tape recording of the declaration of an independent Slovak state made by the Reverend Josef Tiso, T-I-S-O, on March 14, 1939. Slovakia became a separate republic in 1939 after Nazi Germany dismembered Czechoslovakia and took over the Czech parts, Bohemia and Moravia, as a German protectorate. Father Tiso presided over the Slovak state, which was allied to the Nazis until 1945. He was hanged as a war criminal 2 years later. So the ghost of Reverend Tiso is currently haunting political activity in Czechoslovakia. It's worth noting, again, that the Czechoslovak separatists here, or the Slovak separatists, excuse me, heard a speech, the independence speech made by Reverend Tiso, the Nazi collaborator, on March 14th. Of 1939. It's also worth noting that the Slovak separatists received Vatican support just like the Ustashi received. We covered Vatican support for the Ustashi in Radio Free America program number 17, entitled Fascism and the Vatican. And we're now going to go into the ethnic rivalries in Czechoslovakia, and in particular the fascist history of the Slovakian exile movement. And it's worth noting that Václav Havel is now receiving the censure of these individuals. If in fact these activities continue, if Czechoslovakia breaks up, it seems to me that Václav Havel has nobody to blame but himself, because he's been playing footsie with these very same elements.